We're delighted to bring the Go Loud Lounge to All Together Now Festival for the very first time this year. Join us for a weekend of talk, live podcasts, sport, music, wellness, and much more with the best lineup and hosts from Go Loud, News Talk, and Off the Ball across 3 days at the Sold Out Festival. We have a packed program from Friday to Sunday with something for everyone. You can view the full Go Loud Lounge day-by-day lineup over on all our socials. Join us along with a host of special guests from the world of sport, entertainment, music and comedy, as well as crappy quizzes and even a live mock court trial. So make sure to visit us at the Go Loud Lounge at All Together Now, August bank holiday weekend. You'll find us just in front of Curramore House. We'll see you there.
Go Loud.
Maura Rath, welcome to Open Mind.
Hello.
Otherwise known as
Yoga with Maura.
There we go. So we can find you online, Yoga with Maura. So yoga. A lot of us would think of yoga as the down dog, the up dog, the stretching. But I believe there's a lot more to it than just the stretching element.
Absolutely. And for when I started yoga, that was what I thought it was just about. You know, getting toned, creating flexibility. I was running at the time. But that is just one very small part of it.
So tell us a little bit more about what yoga entails, where yoga even came from. Like a lot of our listeners, we're all familiar with yoga,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But like, I don't practice yoga, but we can talk about the
not
fact
yet,
that I do practice elements of yoga. So we can talk about that in a few minutes. But I'm just intrigued. You know, the history of yoga, I don't know anything about it. I know most of our listeners wouldn't know anything about it. So, you know, how did you get into it and what is the history of yoga perhaps, you know?
Yeah, so it's a really deep one, but I'll give you a small synopsis.
Yeah.
So basically, long story short, I was running, living in New Zealand at the time. There's a lot of yoga studios there. You know, this was back in kind of 2011, 2012. And when I moved there and someone was like, if you're feeling a bit tight, just started running, you know, go to a yoga class. So went to a yoga class, went to a couple of yoga classes and was like, this is great. The first one I went to was like, I don't know if you've heard of that Bikram. We don't really talk about it.
Yeah, that's the hot yoga.
The hot yoga.
And is that the guy? There was a whole scandal
with
him.
The whole creep thing.
We won't go too far into that. No. But like he was arrested and locked up, right?
He's on the run actually.
But, oh my God. I'll have to look that up.
It's a Netflix documentary. Yeah. But about 40 degrees heat.
Yeah.
Went to my first class it's like a chamber. So you're not allowed to leave when you enter. I'd never done it before.
Hang on. Whoa. Let's just stop right there. Because I like it. You're not allowed to leave when you enter. So what's that all about?
This was like a more of a traditional studio.
Okay.
You went in, it's a set sequence. I myself had never stretched before.
Right.
I'm 5'10" since I was about 13. Mm. So, you know, usually taller people aren't that flexible naturally.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
sometimes people in a smaller body can be.
Yeah.
So went to the class. And when I first they're closing door, like, yeah, if you need to leave, just lie on your mat. You can't leave and disturb. So I was like, holy shit,
what
are we going to do, you know? Yeah. And did the class, absolutely struggled. After the class, vomited.
Okay.
And was like, I feel amazing. Now, not for vomiting.
Yeah, but
that
just
was
the whole
horrible. But
process.
I just, like, my whole body was drowned in sweat. And at that time in my life, I was very much like, okay, I want to be skinny. You know, I'm always trying to get into being a smaller body.
Yeah.
This was, you know, grew up in the 90s. This is what you want to do. Nothing tastes as good as skinny feels. I was like, oh my God, if I'm sweating like this once or twice a week running, I'm going to be, you know, supermodel.
Yeah, great. Yeah, yeah.
And that's my honest truth.
Sure.
I know that would make a lot of yogis' skin crawl because it's nothing what yoga is about.
No, but I think it's important to be that authentic version of yourself, which clearly you are, by the way, on your Instagram feed as well. So I love hearing this, that's your actual reality in that moment.
That was my reality. And, you know, it was my reality for years in New Zealand. And then I always say, if you don't like yoga, you haven't found the right teacher. So fast forward, you know, I was in there and I was just there for the physical. I was go, go, go. And then probably 4 or 5 years into practicing, I went to this lovely teacher, Lizzie. Shout out, Lizzie. Lovely South African teacher.
Sorry, for those 4 or 5 years, did you still have the same kind of purpose? Was it about being skinny or did that change over that 4 or 5 years?
I was feeling light. You know, at that time, I didn't realize, but I'd be working in a corporate job.
Yeah.
I was de-stressing. You know, my cortisol levels were definitely going down after class. Mm. But it was more like, I wasn't in tune with my body, but I know I feel good when I do this.
Okay.
That was kind of like...
Yeah. And what was your corporate job at the time?
I was working in insurance. Very boring, very much just a paycheck.
Not if you're listening that all insurance is boring, but let's be honest, it is.
Sorry to all the insurance people out there. But I worked with great people and I've no regrets of that time in my life. It definitely helped me for who I am today. But that being said, went to this teacher and something shifted in her class. And it's very hard to put my finger on what it was. Mm. I think it was her energy. I'd done the asanas, which are the yoga postures, so many times before. But it was how she led them in maybe a contemporary way. And we did this meditation at the end. And whatever happened in this meditation to me, I'm not saying that, anyone came then and touched me or anything like that.
Enlightenment.
It was more like I left and I just had this sense of like, what am I doing in my life? Mm. Like, if I can only feel like this teacher's made me feel so incredible right now.
Yeah.
And then every day I'm dreading, or I'm just living for the weekend.
Yeah.
There has to be more. So this kind of sparked something. Mm. So got a bit obsessed with Lizzie, kept going to her classes. She'd see me 3-4 times a week. And then I was like, Lizzie, building the courage, I was like, Lizzie, I want to learn more about yoga. Yeah. I want to go to India. It comes from India.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to go to the birthplace. And she was like, okay, Maureen, you need to go to this school. It's in Goa. And this is where I went, I went there a couple of years ago. Just go immerse yourself. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Then, fear creeps in, life keeps going on, festivals, I was very much out every weekend to do this. And then I decided, I was in New Zealand coming up to 6 years-ish, and I was like, right, I want to go back to Ireland. I'm going to go for a year of travel, and my first stop will be India.
Okay.
I'm going to go there, and I'm going to get so stretched out. I'm going to feel amazing and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to get a proper job, I say in inverted commas, back in Dublin, move to Dublin and start my new life with my New Zealand boyfriend that I'm bringing home. And this was the goal.
Yeah.
So it was like, I'm going to India, went, and I don't know if you've ever been.
No, I'd love to go. I have never been to India.
And it was probably one of the moments that, like, as cheesy as it might sound, maybe like a little bit of eat, pray, love version for looking for myself, went there thinking it's a school, got to do hours, schedules like 6 to 10.
So you had enrolled in a school?
Enrolled in Lizzie's school, literally where Lizzie went. And I was like, right, it's 30 days, 30 days straight. It's 200 hours. This is the qualification.
Yeah.
I'll just get the qualification.
Yeah.
I'll know a little bit more about yoga. And I'll move back to Ireland eventually and teach one class a week. This will fill my cup. So a week in, didn't realize that every day I'd have to sit and do 2 hours of meditation.
Oh, that's part of the practice.
Part of the practice. That's where it all comes from.
Okay.
So then it was 2 hours of physical yoga. And then I started to learn that we have this thing that I'll break down very briefly. There's different limbs in yoga, 8 limbs that we go by.
Okay.
And only one of them is like flexibility.
Okay.
AKA
so that's
physical.
Where this is interesting. I asked for the history and your history and you've given it to me in a very contextualized way. So I love that. There's only one of them is physical. So what's the other 7?
So the other ones is how we treat ourselves, how we treat others, meditation, your breath work, which is you're hearing about all the time, which is called pranayama.
Yeah.
Like there's all different levels of them. And basically, to be a full yogi and to be absolutely, there's no harm. There's no harm to yourself, no harm to ahimsa means, or the word is ahimsa, like no harm to animals. So you'd be like fully vegan.
Okay.
And it's basically a way of life. And also that you are not affected by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever anyone says. So if you were to be a full yogi, you're a monk on your own in a temple. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd like that or not, but it's interesting.
It's so interesting. And I think that we all take part. So now we're hearing about, it's so amazing. Ireland is awake. I feel like it's waking up. You're hearing about meditation.
Sure.
You hear about breath work. You're hearing about all these different things. And this practice of yoga means union.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Means coming together.
Yeah.
It means community. It means anyone can be a yogi. But when you start to study it, it sometimes can feel like a religion and a little bit scary because all of these limbs. But everyone is linked. Everyone is welcome. It's a little bit linked to Hinduism, but also not as well.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. And I myself, even, I did my training 7 years ago and I'm still learning and it's so beautiful. So I'll go back to me in India. That's a little bit of the history. I was suddenly starting to learn all these different parts.
Yeah.
And remember that first week, I was like, I don't know if you're like cursing this podcast, but I was like, FML, fuck my life.
Yeah, you know, you can
sit here for 2 hours listening to this guy going on about meditation and silence. And my back's sore, my bum is sore.
Eyes rolling in your head going, what am I doing here?
Yeah, how I'm itching. Just let me get to the sweaty part. You know, I want to do the physical. I love that. And then there was like this moment and this the teacher Sudhir, who I started to hate at the start, you know? And then I started to be like, okay, Sudhir is this guy that was a monk, basically was silent for like 7 years. You know, was just really amazing guy. But, you know, there was one, I think it was like on the seventh day, and he was like, if you can't do, if you, after 30 days, you know, after 100 days of meditation with me, and if you do, or meditation with yourself, and you're silent for an hour every day, and if you say it doesn't work or it doesn't help you feel good, I'll pay you like whatever. I think he said like $1 million or something.
Yeah,
I don't
know
if this monk had $1 million. Right, but I was like, holy shit, he obviously believes in this stuff. So I sat with it and sat with the discomfort, and things would come up, like things from my childhood, things, you know, you'd be guided to listen to different sounds, and like all of a sudden, and then literally after probably 14 days of me sitting and, you know, and then I was just like, fuck it, just be here.
Just be present.
And I just let go, and it changed everything for me. So 1 month in India turned into 3 months.
Okay, wow.
Turned into me being like, you know, I don't need money. I don't need anyone. I had my husband was with me, but he wasn't my husband then. He was surfing every day because it was in Goa. So I was literally seeing him at night. And then I was going back into this place. He was having this, you know, living his best life.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, it was really good.
It sounds like a perfect kind of life now. I'm not going to lie. You're doing yoga all day. He's surfing all day.
Yeah, so we ended up being in Goa for a couple of months. And like, we were like, when are we ever going to be in between jobs again? You know? And then I was like, okay, right, we're going to go the rest of our trip. And Goa is like this paradise amongst India. Like, it's chaotic, it's magic, but it's so mystical and people are beautiful. And then you go, we were like, right, we might as well see the rest, you know, go to New Delhi, go see Agra. And it's the biggest wake-up call of like how privileged we are.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that many times.
You know, and it honestly shook something in me. And it made me just think that there's more to life, you know, than what I'm living. And also be like, there's no, I don't need money, I don't need this. So when traveling, backpacking around and came back to Ireland, you know, with this idea of like, all I need to do is teach yoga and be happy, you know, then the reality hit.
You need money.
I need money. And I'm living at home with my mom and dad, and I haven't lived at home with my mom and dad for 7 years.
And what age were you roughly when this?
I was probably 27.
Okay.
I hadn't actually lived home since before college. It's not even cert. So all of a sudden you're back into your childhood home and you're like, you've got a boyfriend with you and you're like, oh, everything is not free.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And then it was like, my parents were like, okay, you're going to get back into insurance and stuff. My mom and I are back into, you know, back into getting a proper job. And I was like, I'm just going to give this yoga thing a go. And they were very supportive from the very start.
Yeah.
So that's when it kind of all began. And I'm still giving it a go today.
That's fascinating. That whole trajectory. I love it, right? And actually, you said something earlier on that resonated with me, which is like, you know, if you don't like yoga or if yoga doesn't work for you, you just haven't found the right teacher.
Yeah.
And I compare that as a direct comparison to hypnosis. You know, I'm a hypnotist, Tony Sadar, who is my mentor. He was on last week's podcast. And I always say, you know, people say to me, they come to me all the time and say, listen, I'd like to do some one-to-one work with you. I tried hypnosis before, it didn't work, so hypnosis doesn't work. No, you just haven't found the right hypnotist.
Yeah.
And there's real truth to that.
Yeah.
Like, I really believe that, because you can have such a mindset shift, which you obviously had in Goa at that time. And, you know,
it's so interesting. You have to either, you know, connect with the person, but also I also think it's when we briefly spoke about this, when you're doing something that you love and you feel the passion of someone, you believe in maybe more. I don't know if that's connected to it, but as opposed to when I go to yoga class and the teacher's there because she's covering for someone or she doesn't really want to be there, you feel that energy.
Well, I think, here's a question for you, I think more than anything else, is I really respect somebody like yourself who's gone to the place, the root of where it's all from. Do you know what I mean? And I spent, I don't know how much money over the last 25 years and time and effort, like hunting and mining for information. So I might fly to, for example, Germany, which I've done many times, just for a day to meet a random person that I think might have information that I need to glean information off. And I might pay that person for their information. Or back to your point, like a kind of a moment. Again, I don't particularly like using the word enlightenment because I'm not sure that that's what it was. But,
yeah.
You know, I went to a Wim Hof breathwork seminar in Stroh, which is about an hour north of Amsterdam. And Wim was there. And instead of doing what you would normally do in a Wim Hof breathwork scenario, which, by the way, I know I ping pong a little bit, but actually Wim Hof, a lot of his techniques are based on
100% off yoga, but now it's a new Wim Hof.
Well, of course, everybody relabels things or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
But ultimately, normally if you follow the system, it's 30 deep breaths and on an exhale, you stop breathing. However, at his seminar, because he's there, you do a couple of hundred deep breaths and then you stop on an exhale, which is a very different thing. And people were having seizures, people were wailing and crying, like all kinds of stuff was coming out, trauma. And I was just lying there because I didn't go there for any other reason except I just really am curious, right? Mm-hmm. So I was just lying there, didn't have any trauma that I knew about that was going to come out. So I was just lying there. Everybody else was kind of having freak attacks and stuff. And I was just lying there, kind of enjoying the moment. You know what I mean? I was just like chill.
And the atmosphere.
Yeah, I was just chill. I didn't mind people wailing and stuff. Other people getting disturbed by the wailing. I didn't mind any of that. But then at the end, I'll never forget it, randomly, they played We Are the Champions. I don't know why they even played that song. It's such a random thing to play, like, you know. And then I sat up and all of a sudden I just started crying. And I cried hard. And the harder I cried, then random strangers were coming over to me and hugging me. And I was like, oh my God, I'm that guy. I'm the guy. Everybody feels. And I'm like, but they weren't sad tears, but they also weren't happy tears. They were just cathartic tears. Yeah. But going to the root of places and I suppose gaining those learnings, when you're looking online, because again, for anybody who hasn't seen Maura's page, I think it is important that, you know, you're irreverent, you're authentic. When you look at other people in your genre who have this pristine, perfect look online and they put out, and perhaps they haven't gone to learnings that you've gone to. Like, what's your opinion on that, how popular, I suppose, different, because there's a lot of noise out there in your genre.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's space for all of us, you know, and I know I'm a mystic teacher. I say mystic, I'm whimsical. But I'm someone, I suppose my teaching is from, I don't naturally have a flexible body.
Okay.
But I love pushing the body out of the comfort zone, you know, really getting deep into your practice. And I feel like I'm wobbling with my students and we're in it together. Okay. And that's my way.
There's vulnerability in that then.
Absolutely. But like, there's like, I don't believe anyone is perfect, you know, and I think it depends, you know. I think sometimes when we see this perfect, you know, curated page, like I'd love to have a curated, perfect page. No, I'm only kidding. I wouldn't.
No.
It would stress me out. I wouldn't be able to.
but that's the problem.
But I like the look of that. You know, I think the aesthetics of, God, if I could only be that person, but I'm not going to be able to, it would be tiring for me to be that person. Yeah. But I know for other people, it wouldn't be. And I just think sometimes there is this little bit of yoga ego. Okay. Yep. And I think it's in every, I don't know if it's in your, you know.
It's in our industry, big time. Yeah.
In every industry, it's there, you know, whatever job you do. And I just think it's there. And I'm just like, I put on the blinkers. I'm just kind of in my lane and I'm not looking at what other people are doing. And I've never done that.
Yeah.
And you know, it's so interesting. I had this company that came on to help me look for, I was going to do some paid Meta ads.
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, who's your biggest competitor in Dublin, in Ireland?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I have one. Like, and that sounds like so like your ego. Like, I was like, I genuinely don't think anyone is doing what I'm like.
Yeah.
They're doing loads of, like Yoga Hub, all these places are doing amazing yoga, but I'm just doing my thing.
Mm.
And I think that didn't answer your question at all. But do you know what I mean?
No, it did. I'm quite fascinated, actually. So you got back, your parents supported your quest.
Yeah.
Like, how does that start? So for me, it was a different trajectory, right? Because I found magic when I was 5, went to college, and then I jumped ship and just became a full-time entertainer when I was 23 and just went for it, right?
Yeah.
It's very different, I suppose, when you're in your mid to late 20s, you're home, you're with the parents, they're supporting you. But how do you start? Because there's going to be people listening to this podcast who've got an idea, and they don't know how to start that idea as a business in the world we're in.
And
did you just start that idea?
The thing is that I think is really important to say, like, I worked a job that had a very good salary.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, I think I was taking in like 70K a year or something in New Zealand. So I saved my arse off before I left my job. I got this idea to go to India. It took me 3-4 years to quit my job.
Okay.
And even just before I quit my job, I was offered a higher paying job because I was like, the year before, I was like, you know what, I'll get more money to go do this.
Yeah.
You know, you need to have, I don't just quit on my last paycheck, you know?
Right.
So I had this little insurance policy. Yeah. In my head, I was like, maybe a deposit for a house, you know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Funny, I was that smart back then. And so that was like my little, like I had that little bit to fall back on. Then yeah. I obviously moved to my parents where I didn't have rent to pay, you know, but I had a little bit of money
yeah.
to live on. Not much at that stage after traveling for nearly a year, but enough to not be like, okay,
yeah.
you know? So that's one thing. Also, I don't have kids. Mm-hmm. I didn't have kids at that time either. I, you know, left the job and I had just found myself in India. I'd given myself space away from my phone, from away from everyone. And there was no distractions and there was no one in my ear. You know, I was just living my best life and I was free and then I was clear. But I also am a big manifester. And I also was like, you know what, like, I can always find a new job.
Right.
I can go work in the shop next week. I'll get a job in a petrol station. I'll be grand. But if I don't just give this a go for a year, give this a go for a few months and see what the crack is with it, I'll always wonder.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really my go in me. And then like, it's so funny because I get so many messages, people like, oh, I'm thinking of, you know, being a yoga teacher. And I remember when I did my training, 60 of us graduated from that school at the same time.
Okay.
Two groups of 30. And I think four of us now are still teaching.
That's all.
And, you know, it's so glamorized online. Mm. And, you know, that first, like, I remember I was like so delusional. I was away, as my last country was Colombia. I rang up a local gym that had a spare dance room. I was like, hey, can I hire this, you know, 12 hours a week? I'm going to do 12 yoga classes.
Yeah.
And they were like, boom, yeah. I think back then it was like €20 an hour.
Okay.
I was like, I can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I literally was like, okay, made an Instagram, couldn't think of a name. So I was like, feck it, yoga more.
Okay.
That'll do. I think I had like 300 followers, which were all family and friends. From, you know, around the world or Wexford, got home. I was like, right, I'm going to open these classes in 2 weeks. Went around, you know, by myself with loads of flyers. I remember I made nutballs up and down Gory Street. I was like, you know, I'm going to do it. And everyone was like, this is great. This is great. I was like, I'm going to be booked out.
This is going to be deadly. Yeah.
You know, all right. The first class, I remember I had one girl.
Right.
One girl.
Yeah.
Then, you know, months later, after really showing up, I would have an average of 1-2 per class.
Okay.
The 12 classes turned into 4 classes because it was just
not viable.
Bananas. So I was there for 3-4 months. I was losing money on the rent, even though the rent wasn't much compared to what I'm paying now. But those ladies that showed up for me, even if there was one person there, I never huffed and puffed.
Okay.
I gave my best yoga.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, if this can happen. And then I just had this feeling something would happen. So then moved up to Dublin. I was like, right, okay. I was a yoga teacher on wheels for a few years. I taught in every studio that would have me around the place.
All right. Okay. So yoga for hire then.
Yeah. So literally I was doing 20 odd classes a week and I could be in town. It could be north of the city, south of the city. And I was going bananas with it. Then I got a space in Black Rock. I was like, okay, we'll start again. And it took me ages. And finally, I started to have full classes. I had 15 people in class. And I was like, this is it. This is the shit. I'm making some money.
Yeah.
AKA, I think I was making €500 a week. And I was thrilled at myself.
Yeah, yeah.
This is paying my rent. I'm so happy. And I kept saying, something big is coming. Something big is coming. And I just, not psychic now, but I just had this feeling, feeling and a knowing from my meditation and from my practice. I feel like from stillness, we can get these kind of feelings. The big thing, COVID. Okay.
Okay. So that's so, all I can see with this fast track you.
COVID happened.
Okay, I get it. I can see where it's like, going.
Yeah. It's gone, right? My business is gone overnight. Mm. Every class, every event, I had retreats booked in Greece.
Yeah.
Had to cancel, refund people, everything. I was like, something big was coming, all right.
Yeah.
It's gone. Yeah. After all my hustling from 2017 to 2020, it's gone. And that day when that happened, I was literally like, FML, like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Took to my yoga mat, as I do, as cheesy as it might sound, did a big practice. After the practice in my shavasana, oh, I feel grand now. I was like, oh, that was a reset. And then I was like, there's so much fear. This is when people are running to get toilet paper. Remember there was no
beans, everyone was going bananas.
So I, at that time, I had 3,000 followers. And I remember it because I remember the week before I was on 2998. And when I got the 3,000, I was like, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was so happy, you know. And then I came on to my followers and I was like, hey guys, the world is, we don't know what's happening. Yeah. I did some yoga and I feel great. But now I obviously can't teach us all in person. I was like, I'm just going to do some free online yoga from, this was like on the Friday, on Monday, if anyone wants to come online, tune in here at 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. each day for the next 2 weeks because we're closing for 2 weeks. So whatever happened, that Instagram story, and I made another video and I put it up and it just kind of blew up over the weekend.
Okay.
I think I got like another 4,000 followers that
weekend. Wow, so it jumped huge.
It jumped and a few newspapers like, oh, or no, actually, no, sorry, I'm lying. That Monday I started and then people started telling people.
Yeah, yeah, word of mouth.
By the end of the week, I had like 400 people joining in and it was like my followers had doubled, tripled.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is bananas, you know? And people were like, oh my God, this is great. And I was like, this is what I wanted, to get my yoga out there, you know? And then fast forward 12 weeks of giving free yoga, I grew an Instagram following from it and then was able to start an online yoga studio, sell out my yoga retreats and and had loads of other failures since, but still going. So that's kind of it.
but I think just the resilience that you showed is fascinating. I also, like, let's loop back to the manifestation because everybody has their own different personal take on manifestation. Mm. And it's kind of a sexy word at the moment online.
Yeah.
Right? So a lot of people are talking about the power of manifestation. A lot of people are selling the power of manifestation well, which we have to be careful of. I suppose, like, if you look back to the first time really people, I believe, really heard, like on a worldwide scale about manifestation was, do you remember The Secret by Rhonda Byrne?
And that was the book that really shifted it for me. And it's nice that you said that this is a funny word because you know what, Keith, like I feel like I love believing in manifestation, but I also believe in hard work. And I also,
this is it, you see.
This is it. And I also think that it can be mixed with privilege.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm very aware I'm a white woman. Mm. Privileged. I have everything going for me in Ireland. I have a roof over my head. I have a family that supports me. I have a supportive partner. Yeah, I wasn't given anything. Mm-hmm. I wasn't giving any money. I don't come from wealth. But that privilege, you know, the same as a person that is, you know, going through hell on earth now, you know. So I think it's really important to be aware of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
And like your circumstances definitely help what you can bring into your life. But if you just sit there and be like, I really want this, I really want this, I'm manifesting this, and you do nothing about it other than sit on your arse and complain about it, that's all you're going to attract. Nothing. But if you get out there, get uncomfortable and just trust, but do not give up. And I'm very stubborn and I persevere and a bit addicted to my job. So
but you see, I think this is important though. See, I think it's important, right? I think. I see it as a mindset shift. And I think that the person I believe kind of scientifically who puts it the best way is probably Bob Proctor. I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Proctor's teachings. So Bob, I think, might have been in The Secret. I could be wrong in that. I'd have to check that out. But ultimately, Bob talks about frequency levels. And different people are on different frequencies. And we're here based on our paradigm. And our paradigm is a set of beliefs that we've had since we're children. You know, our preachers, our teachers, our parents, and so on and so on. We learn from them our belief systems. Then as we grow older, we develop our own belief system. But nonetheless, we're defined by our belief systems. So if you're on a frequency that's a negative frequency, you are going to ultimately attract negative things in your life because you're going to be, there'll be a cognitive bias to seek negativity. But if you're on a positive frequency, which I believe is what manifestation truly is, it's, okay, what's next for me? So, you know, if I use myself as an example for my compelling future, okay, what's next? All right, I've done the Olympia Theatre a million times. I've done the Borgosh now. That's 2,000 people. What's next? What's the next thing that I could do? What's the next trajectory? What would excite me? What's the biggest venue in Ireland? Can I do that? Can I manifest that? Well, I can't manifest it by just visualization or just thinking about it. Like you, I've got to be stubborn. I've got to be prepared to fail. I've got to be prepared.
Put yourself out there, talk to people and make it known. But then also,
and work like a crazy person. Like my work ethic, like people can't question it. They can question lots of other things with me, right? Get things wrong all the time. But they cannot question my work ethic.
You put the hours in and that's amazing.
I mean?
But also I feel like, does it make you scared a little bit? Not scared, that like, we're always wanting the next thing. Like,
but this is it.
Sometimes I worry about myself, as in like I'm on a high constantly and I'm chasing that buzz of just like success. But my success always comes back to like my biggest success is I have this community, Sunrise Yoga Clubbers, where people just come together, do yoga once a month for free. And I was telling a story to someone recently, like this guy, I think he was like maybe in his 80s. I could be so wrong on his age, but he was an older guy. Last year, I had a load of people come to this class. He's seen a crowd of people in Dunleary walking, so he just followed them.
Okay? Wow. Oh, I love this.
Had never done anything before. He said everyone put their yoga mats down, put his coat down, and just started doing yoga. came up to me and was like, I never did that before. And like, I just follow people. And I was like, I've made it. Like, this is amazing. This guy is. Yeah. And I gave him the biggest hug and he was like, that's mad that you just do this every month. Like, yeah. I actually feel good after that, you know? And, you know, I've seen him a few times after. And like, it's just so like, for me, that's what yoga's about.
And where do you do this? The Sunrise Yoga?
I do it in Dunleary in Sandy Cove there. And I just started, this was actually another COVID story. Like, I had all these people online that I couldn't see, and I'm a human connection extrovert person. I was getting lonely. I was like, right, lads, when we can get in a field together, we'll do it.
Yeah.
And now I do it every month. This community Sunrise, it's called my Sunrise Clubbers.
That's a beautiful
thing.
The
new clubbing without a headache.
And you put on music and you club at the end of it.
Yeah, we have a dance. We do yoga, and like we start at sometimes summer 6 a.m.
All right, I'm committing. I'm going to one of these. Yeah, I love the idea.
In August, we just had one on Saturday. Yeah,
I love the idea of this. Yeah. You know, because so stretching. Let's just talk about the stretching element for a moment. I think men in particular, right?
Yeah.
Just, I don't know what it is. Avoid stretching. I was with a friend yesterday, like not talking about you at all, not even thinking about you. He lifts heavy weights. He's got his own podcast. He's got his own business. Super fit guy. Like he's kind of a monster. He's 6'6", ex rugby player. Like, the muscles are just kind of hanging off him, like you're beefy as hell. And I was like, yeah. I was like, do you do any stretching? He's like, no stretching. And I, you know, loads of friends of mine, I talk about stretching. I only found stretching, I'm going to say, a year and a half ago. And it is yoga-based stretching, I believe.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I ended up with loads of injuries. I'm a very injured human being. I don't look injured when I walk down the street, but I've got a lot of injuries, right?
Yeah.
And I had this tendonitis of both elbows, and the doctors couldn't fix it, and it's one of those things, right?
Yeah.
So somebody recommended a name to me, so I'll say it out loud. Pepe Fotti, right? My God, what a person. He's based out in Cabinteely, and never heard of him before.
Yeah.
So I'm only saying his name because he worked brilliantly with me, and I went out to him, and ultimately he's a body movement person, as movement expert, I suppose is what you call him. But definitely the positions I ended up in, they're yoga based and some not yoga based, some strength based and so on. But ever since I went to him, I haven't been in a while, I want to go back, but ultimately I just made it part of my routine. So every day I do 15 minutes of
that's
stretching.
Amazing.
And if I stretch in front of you now, you would ask, oh yeah, that's the down dog, the this, the that. You'd know some of the positions for sure. And I'm a very stiff human being naturally.
Yeah.
And like what you said, like I'm not tall, but I'm 6 foot. So my body's not naturally flexible.
Yeah.
I do find now, if I miss for a day, it's fine. But if I miss like 3 or 4 days, my hips lock up now.
No,
my back locks
you
get, up.
And I always say this to people, is that the more you do, the more you want it. Because you know how good it feels. And you know, maybe your hips were always doing that, right?
Yeah.
But you weren't aware of it.
Mm.
And I think like if you're, you know, yoga, I mean, we've talked a lot about like for the mind and everything.
Yeah.
But like, for longevity, and like if you have kids or you want to be able to bend down and pick up a book when it falls,
this is it, yeah,
for your whole life. Like, I don't know about you, but like one of my goals is just to live well,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
live
yeah.
well and live to 100, but be able to move, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And this guy, you know, that sounds like a great beast, you know, it will catch up on him. Like the stretching, and I just think that, like, you know, it could even, like, what's even more powerful, if you do 5-10 minutes a day than just going to 1 hour a week. And I know that's not selling my business very well, but like I have a regular online studio that I teach yoga every day, and it's just 30 minutes. And
yeah.
These people are with me the last 5 years and we do it 30 minutes a day. I think if you can't take 30 minutes a day, you know, you might need to change some things. Okay.
Yeah.
But if you can take 30 minutes, whether it's for your gym, for your walk, movement is medicine. Movement is key. And there's a lovely saying, if you rest, you rust.
Well, it's very true. Well, here's a crazy thing though, right? So, well, not a crazy thing, but I suppose this is all about priorities. So let's ping pong this for fun, right? For a minute, right? So I know, because I study all this stuff, right? So I know for sure, contrast therapy, the pendulum swinging towards heat therapy being definitely one of the most important things you can do for longevity. So sauna, 3 times a week, I think it is, 15 minutes or 20 minutes. So it's roughly about an hour a week. Well, definitely 100%. There's like a lot of studies being done on this, add to your longevity. So
amazing.
sauna, but that takes time, right? Then it's like, Well, we've got yoga. So we'll just say what you said, half an hour a day. So now you got that.
Even
now,
15 minutes, come on.
Yeah, but then breath work. Yeah. So breath work takes about 15 minutes a day.
Yeah, but if you're doing yoga, you're doing breath work.
But then strength training, if you're into the weights and stuff and you want to do strength training as well, then so it's like, where are my priorities? So for me, like, you know, I'm trying to stack every day as much as I can with my self-hypnosis, my breath work, my contrast therapy, my stretching. But what, like, I know you're a yoga expert, but what do you see as the most important thing first and foremost?
Like, this is...
Do you see that as definitely the yoga? Or you, because other studies have shown strength training is the way to go.
Absolutely.
For longevity.
But also, like, you haven't done one of my sweaty, strong vinyasa classes. Like,
so you get strong you from do, yoga.
And, like, your muscles get long and lean.
So sorry, I have to go back. Sweaty, strong vinyasa.
Vinyasa flow is a style.
What does that mean?
So it's a movement base. You're using all your body weight.
Okay.
It's intense. Your muscles are shaking. We target different muscle areas. Mm. It's kind of a little bit more of a contemporary. So you know, when you said breath work, every movement is linked with a breath.
Okay. Yeah.
So you're expanding. You're inhaling. You're reaching up.
Yeah.
You're exhaling. You're coming down to the earth. So you're in this. It's also meditation. So you're in this continuous movement of strength movement. So to answer your question, of course I'm going to say yoga is the best. That being said, your yoga doesn't have to be on the mat. Okay. Your yoga, which kind of people are like, what could be your walk?
Okay.
Could be your weights. Something that you are taking the time for yourself.
Yep.
You're looking after your body. You're doing something good for yourself. What's worse than you know, being hard on yourself for not doing things is worse than not doing
it.
Right. Because then you're
beat
mentally going down a spiral because of it. So I just say to people, like, prioritize what's important to you. You know, I was having a moment yesterday of, you know, everything was coming on top of me, leaving everything to last minute. And I was like, right, I'm going to just take 5 minutes meditation. My 5 minutes turned into 15 minutes.
Okay.
And I just think if you can't take 5 minutes for yourself, 5 minutes resting is not, it's not scrolling. Okay. It's not being on your phone. It's not doing this.
I was about to ask, sorry, what is your five, because this is important for our listeners. Because everybody has a different take on meditation as well.
Yeah.
What's your 5 to 15 minute meditation look like? Do you put on music? Do you put on an app? Is it just inside your own head? Describe that to us.
Okay, so it was always, what I would do is put on a chant or something on Spotify. So there's great songs or some kind of music.
Yeah.
Now I'm at a stage in my practice where I can just sit in silence and I love that, but I'm so aware because that used to make my skin crawl.
Right.
So put on a music, put on a chant. Your meditation can be a dance around the kitchen.
Right,
shake your body up. You know, animals stretch, shake, move. I don't know, I'm dog obsessed. And she gets off the couch or she walks up a step, she stretches, she shakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, releases that tension from the body. We do nothing like that. So that 5 minutes, I just think we have to do these little things. You have to put the work in.
Well, this is it. It's about putting the work in and having the discipline to put the work in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people out there. They're anxious. They're depressed. You know, they're scared. They're lonely. And I think just these simple things like what you've just said, 5, 15 minutes, shake yourself out of your, you know, whatever bad humor you're in or whatever feeling that you have, shake yourself out of that or stretch yourself out of that or sit in silence for a moment to just get inside your own head.
Yeah, that's it. Like a lovely one is that you've been on a drive and the radio's been going or the kids have been screaming. Everyone gets out of the car, you close the door. You know that silence in the car?
Yeah.
Just be with that silence. I love a silent car.
Mm.
Like, you know, when you arrive somewhere or something, it's just like, have a moment with your breath. I also think, you know, one of my values is movement.
Yeah.
Okay. And I love feeling good, like all the time. And that's my core value of how I live. So it's easy for me to add loads of movement. So maybe it's time to ask yourself, what are your core values? You know, and anyone that comes to my yoga classes and then I don't see them for months, they come back. They're like, oh my God. And they're so like, they're apologizing. And I'm like, stop apologizing.
Yeah, yeah.
You're here now. Should this happen and that happen? And the weeks went, you're always welcome back to yoga.
Yeah.
You know, like today, if you're feeling, listen to this, get out and listen to it, you know, in the fresh air. You're going to feel way better.
But I think this is interesting about what you mentioned about core values. I was at a conference recently and I asked very high powered business people. I just said, okay, we talk about company purpose all the time. Company purpose, company vision, compelling vision for the company. And I said, okay, I want you to be brutally honest here now. How many of you actually have your own core values clearly defined and written down? And there's about 100 people in the audience and not one hand went up.
Mm.
And what you said is so important because if you don't have your core values clearly defined, then you're going to just, again, kind of ping pong and be all over the place with not aligning yourself to your values. And people don't realize when you align yourself to your values, magic can happen. So like one of my, so I think it's really, really interesting now that one of your values is movement. I would never have thought of movement at all in a million years as even being a value. But that's what people need to realize. Your values are so specific to you. So,
and it's such a gift. Like, we take it for granted us being able to sit up here now and talk to each other and move our mouths, you know?
Yeah, completely.
And I just think that, like, spend time, and you know, we hear a lot online now, oh, find your purpose, and that can be daunting. It's like, oh, I don't know what my purpose is. Like, I just want to make money, I want to live, I want to, you know, keep people happy. That's it. But, like, actually, for you, like, what do you love to do? And it might just be running around with your dog in the grass, do you know what I mean?
Anything.
And that, if that can bring you joy and peace and calm, that's your, you know,
And your values change over time, so
absolutely,
like, right now, at this moment in time. For a lot of very specific reasons, actually, my number one core value, because I do have them defined, is adventure. Like, I want adventure again. I haven't had an adventurous year this year. It's just been like a busy year, right? For 6-7 months. And the adventure hasn't been there. And it's so important to me. I'm an adventurous person. Mm. Second on my value system is curiosity, right? So that's why I love doing this podcast. I'm infinitely curious about lots of different things. But again, my curiosity has been kind of squashed a little bit this year. So now I'm just going to make space for that again. But unless you're aware of what your values are, and it's very easy to actually find your values, you just type into Google, list of values. People are freaked out.
ChatGPT, talk to us. Tell us, what are my values?
Well, not even what are my values, just list the top 150 values that I can pick from. So then people can just go down through that list and go, oh, I never thought integrity might be a value. Oh, I never thought authenticity might be a value, or whatever, our movement is a value. Do you know what I mean? And then you can sit and think with that for a moment. And if we backtrack again just for a moment, like, it has to be daunting for people out there listening who might have an idea to turn it into a business. Now, yours happened in a very specific way because of COVID, but I'm intrigued, even from my own selfish standpoint, like, I've got a business and people don't realize, like, I have Google Ads sometimes. I don't have at the moment. But like, for years, I ran Google Ads. And for anybody out there who doesn't even know what a Google Ad is, like, it's basically a paid advertisement.
When people search something and the first sponsored ones will come up.
Exactly, yeah. And you have to outbid other people. So, I had Google Ads. And, you know, during COVID, I pivoted online. So I had Google Ads specific to virtuals. And I did a lot of virtuals online, virtual performances and so on. But I think just to loop back to it, somebody out there has just got an idea, a concept. You know, how do you put together, and you don't have to give me the inner secrets.
There's no secrets.
But just like, did you find a business manager, a business person? Did you take a course on how to set up like your online business, your online courses? How did that even happen? How do you find somebody? See, my website's a very standard website. I don't have an online element to that, as an online coach.
Yeah.
How do you find
it? I mean, I would love to find a business coach. Like, I would love it, because I feel like I've got so much more that I can give. And, you know, the yoga, the movement is everything that I love, but I actually do love the business side of it.
Yeah.
And I come from a family full of entrepreneurs.
Okay.
My dad was farmer, builder, everything, right? Yeah. Loads of different businesses. He has a shop. My brothers are plumbers. They're all in the trades, right? So everyone was kind of, would always go out and work for themselves. And that was kind of my household, bar my mom. She was a nurse. And I just think, I was hearing about that a little bit, okay? Not realizing I was hearing it, subconsciously always
you're
hearing
absorbing
about
that. Yeah.
But then I also was like, okay, I need to figure out a way to make it work.
Okay.
And I think that loads of people can tell you, you know, sign up for business courses, and like, I think it's great. Your own information's good, right?
Yeah.
Information's power. You're going to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't do that.
Okay.
I was like, okay, I was just thinking, if I can just teach some physical classes, you know, I can then, and I never did it for the money. So this is the whole thing that's probably missing. I wasn't like, okay, what financially is going to make me the most money? Because you don't want to, you don't become a yoga teacher to be rich.
Sure.
Okay. It's not, they're not in line. And richness, money isn't one of my goals, but I also need to be able to have a home and dress myself, you know? So this is kind of a funny thing. I went from really just trial and error, like, you know, and you said, oh, a website there. Like, I, over COVID, you know, gave out all this free classes, then overnight decided to launch this online course, this online studio. And I think 800 people signed up that next day. So it was really good, straight, first big lump of cash. And then I had this really shitty system that I found online that I was paying membership for, and I was emailing people physically Zoom links, and it was just bananas, yeah. All the errors and the admin. So then I went through this, and then I was like, right, okay, I'm going to get an app. You know, I want to have an app, something different.
Yeah.
And then I found this guy, and he was like, okay, no one in Ireland has an app, da da da. And my ego was like, I'll be the first person with a yoga app, da da da. Oh, every penny that I made in COVID, I think I made 120K. I spent it all on that app.
Wow. Okay.
The app failed.
Oh my God. So this is a failure. I like this. But I do like hearing failures.
So this app was going to be the everything. Okay.
That's huge money as well.
Huge money. And, you know, I never was in it for money. Yeah. I made money so quick. I was like, you know, after not making money for years, you know, since I was in a salary job, and I was like, boom. And then, you know, and I suppose I'm not attached to money. Really? Yeah. And that's not because I grew up with wealth. I think it's just a mindset. Like, I just believe money will come, you know, that kind of way. And I also would be good at, like, never going down to zero, you know, and making ends meet.
Like,
like, randomly, I wouldn't be a girl that would be shopping at the weekend for an outfit.
You're not Brow Thomas.
No, God, no. And my money is all to do with my business, you know? And, like, so this was kind of happening. And then I put the money into the app. I was like, this is going to run. And then realize, you know, Google or Apple get 30% of every Apple store purchase. Da, da, da. And all of a sudden, I created this monster.
Right.
There was glitches. The app company had me by the balls. Every time something went wrong, it was a couple of grand. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to keep on things. So I just built this monster. And I was like, what the hell have I done? Like,
sorry, you're a yoga instructor. You're a yogi.
I know.
You're stressed.
So I was out of my mind stressed for about 7 months. I was like getting sick constantly for that year. It was actually a year and it was just hell. And I just felt like really betrayed by this business. Took it completely personal as well, which you shouldn't, you know.
Shouldn't have business, but it's hard not to.
I was kind of like scammed. But then when I think back, I wasn't scammed. He told me this was the story of the app. And every time he said, this is what it costs, I was like, okay, that's what it costs. I didn't question. Yeah, I just went for it. Didn't research deeply. Then it was coming to a stage where I was like, what am I doing? Like, there's glitches every morning. All these people online. Go back to my Zoom links.
Right,
like,
okay.
I decided to let go of the app, which was a really hard pill to swallow. And then I was like, oh, maybe I'll sell the app. I've got this software.
Right.
Tried to sell the app. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's only worth money if you sell your database with it. And I was like, no, they're my yogis.
Yeah.
So let go of the app. Let it go. Decided to get a website built. Start from scratch. And a basic website that turned into quite a clever website.
Okay.
Spent a bit of money on it. And got away from the app. So anyone out there listening, don't get an app. Don't get a custom app.
People have tried to sell me apps over the years. And for some reason, my gut just avoided it.
I mean, apps are great if you're, like, I was a baby business. I'm still a baby business. But if you're a multi-million euro turning over business or hundreds of thousand euro business, you can afford it. But I couldn't afford the maintenance at the time.
Yeah.
So it was just this big hole, this monster that was killing me. So then I got the website, kind of relaunched things again in September 23. And so it's like we only talk about our success, right? Yep. And I just think, like, through my business, there's been probably 10 other failures like that. Mm. But I never gave up, or I'll find another way to do it.
Yeah.
And that's probably the difference. You know, people will message me and they'll be like, hey, Maura, I'm just wanting to know, how do you get online classes going?
Yeah.
I never messaged anyone and asked them that question. What did I do? I sat on YouTube.
Yeah.
Are people now messaging me and they're like, hey, Maura, what mic and speaker are you using? I'm like, I literally am using this thing that I bought 3-4 years ago. And I do my research.
Yeah.
Like, it's really like, and it almost triggers me a little bit, you know? And then people are like, oh, Maura, like, how do you build a business? I'm like, don't just ask for the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no answer. Mm. Like, I'd love to tell you, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
But we'd be here, I could write a book, do you know?
Well, no, that's important because, like, people, specifically kind of young magicians, because, look, I've come from a magic background. I don't really do magic at all anymore. I still love it as a hobby. But, like, specifically younger magicians, they email me all the time. And I try and take time for these people, you know, and I try and advise them as best as I can. But they want the fast track.
Yeah.
How did you make it? How did you do all this television? And I'm like, I could write, like you, I could write book after book after book. Like, I failed. I burnt my hands on the toasters in McDonald's when I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? I did kids' magic from Ross Lair to Roscoff and Cherbourg in France. And I did, like, bad kids' magic. And none of these kids want to do that. They just want to jump online, become insta famous.
Yeah, and like I will help every yoga teacher. Like they'll know I will help you and yeah. I'll tell you, you know, guide you and I'll help you and I'll help you be, I'll be a mentor. But like there's no quick fix.
No.
And there's no such thing. Like even if you, I don't know, do people do this? They buy an Instagram account with loads of followers. Like each person that connects me online have either been to yoga class with me, been on a retreat or been to a community event or something. So there's like this human connection to it.
But you've got, like, you've got quite a following on Instagram, but I can see that, you know, it's engaged followers rather than what you said,
yeah,
hundreds
yeah.
of thousands of followers. It's similar to my own account. Like, only recently has my own account kind of popped, but, like, I'm there for hours every day interacting with them as part of my business. Back to what you said, like, during COVID, I don't know how many hours I spent figuring out, like, how to operate Zoom and all those things, and no one taught me. Like
no,
I had to figure it out myself. But I took all these online courses.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them were useless.
Yes, I was the same. And like I was onto Zoom helpline because they kept cutting me, and like Zoom was a disaster. Now it's really good, you know, back then. And like I have done every YouTube video like about business and about things, and like so I've taken things from places, but I sit and do the work.
Well, this is it.
You know, and also my husband would be a little bit more tech than me. So he would often, you know, I don't have a good eye for like attention to detail. So like the camera, he'll like help me with bits and pieces
okay.
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you know, I have support like that as well, but I also just try it myself.
Let's talk about diet for a moment.
Because Jesus.
Well, in your world, right? In the kind of yoga world, like, let's be honest.
I'm saying no Jesus because I could talk about this a lot, Keith.
Let's go. No, but I'm just, because I've seen your content, right? Mm. So I know a little bit about, you know, I suppose you talk about diet sometimes.
Mm.
Again, in a kind of an irreverent way. You're there 1 week, you're talking about, you know, pigging out on meals and then feeling bloated and so on. And then other times.
Diet culture would be what I would kind of talk about.
Well, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
The reason I bring it up is, again, let's be honest now, in the kind of yoga world, like when I'm looking at that, and it comes up my feed all the time because I do my stretching, so I'm looking for stretching-based stuff. The majority, not all of course, but the majority of yoga teachers, like...
are in a smaller body.
Thin-looking.
They're in their little
They look amazing. They look amazing. You know, and like I always look at them and go, I wonder...
And this
like,
is what the Western what world has like. Done to yoga, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose the diet is a big thing because like in yoga, I mentioned earlier, you know, traditional yogis wouldn't eat meat and eat vegan.
Yeah, you're vegan or vegetarian.
I went through that probably for 4 or 5 years and now I'm a flexitarian. That's what I call myself. I eat
love
everything.
That. I've never heard that before, yeah, a flexitarian.
I feel like I might have come up with myself.
I like that, yes.
So, flexitarian.
Own that. I like it.
So a bit of everything. So like, you know, one of the yoga limbs, you know, connected is like not harming your body by overeating, right? So I grew up in, you know, a time where Kate Moss would say, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels, okay?
Yeah,
and this kind of toxic behavior.
Yeah.
And the size of your body shouldn't determine your health, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is a battle that I'm working with now, you know?
Yeah.
Since I can remember, I've always tried to be smaller, even though I'm slim. Okay. And even though I'd be a size, I always wanted to be a size 8 or a size 10. It's really skinny. And I'm naturally a size 12. Okay.
Yeah.
When I'm fueling and eating right. And it's this whole world of what women are led to believe what success is, what healthy looks like because of what we see on mainstream media, what we see in magazines, what we see on movies, what we see in this body. But the reality is, you know, everybody, like whatever size you are, you can still be the healthiest person in the world. And someone that's tiny is the most unhealthiest person in the world.
So
I'm really trying to move away from this. But also, you know, I also maybe have become aware, maybe I'm a little, without realizing it, I don't judge people bigger bodies, but maybe I had a little bit of fat phobia.
Okay.
So I was fear of myself getting fat.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is so ridiculous. And I asked myself, why? Why is that? Is it because I haven't seen it before? Or this is what I'm taught that isn't healthy. If I look like this, if I'm a fat or bigger girl, well, people, I'm not doing her yoga because you'll look like that.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
well, there is a bit of that.
There is a bit
suppose,
of that.
Involved,
and,
yeah.
And I suppose what I'm trying to do is eat, fuel my body with good food. Don't put food in, you know, groups. Good food, bad food. You know, food is food.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't even get into that because I'm not a dietitian or I'm not, you know, I'm not a nutritionist. But personally, when I eat food that I make, when I eat lots of fruit and veg, and I eat in balance, I eat fish, I eat meat, I eat oils, and I eat fats, I eat all this stuff, I feel great.
Mm.
Okay? When I eat a good sized portion, I'm not hungry, and I'm fueling myself, I feel amazing.
Yep.
I look great. I move really well in my body, and I'm good. If I go out a weekend and I eat a burger, chips, or I'm at a wedding and I've eaten this and then I'm eating crisp sandwiches, potato sandwiches at whatever time, and then I'm eating crap, I feel crap.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? And I don't really drink that much alcohol anymore, the odd glass of wine. So I can't put it down to that. So that's my personal feeling.
Yeah.
And people say there's not good food or bad foods. So that's, but I feel like...
Well, there's definitely bad foods. I mean, which is the ultra-processed.
I know, but they actually say that there's lots of studies now that if a child grows up in a household, right, and they're... educated about food.
Yeah.
Okay. Educated about protein, about this and what will fill you.
Yeah.
And there's no restrictions. Like in my house, it was a goodie bus. Okay. We weren't let in there. And I was trying to
sit. Yeah.
And the whole thing was like, sit down, don't leave that table unless you finish your spuds. Yeah. That's the whole story, you know? And that's what I've grown up to believe. So I'm a big eater. Like I can never be full, right?
Right. Yeah.
And this is the whole thing. And if you grow up at a house where food is food, the child is educated, what's protein, what's this, what you need to have fuel and energy to run fastest in your race in school or whatever. Sometimes there's theories, I don't know, I don't have kids, that kids might choose the Greek yogurt over the chocolate bar.
Well, I don't know.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know.
Well, I've got kids, right? So I can lean into this. My kids are like big into... karate and rugby, so they're very sport orientated. They completely understand protein. Like my son loves the idea when he comes home from rugby, he has a smoothie, which I'm not even sure what's in it, but it's all the good stuff. There's
fueling himself.
Yeah, like there's no protein powder or anything in it, but whatever way my wife makes it, there's like cacao nibs in there. There's
amazing.
All kinds of things in there. And I know that and milk, like just whole milk, normal milk, but he's delighted in the fact that he knows it's 50 grams of protein going in straight away after his workout.
Yeah.
And we cook every day, and it's generally speaking like meat or fish, protein, vegetables. So it's healthy stuff.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, like he will just devour all the chocolates and so it's a mixture is what I'm saying. They'll eat the protein and they understand the difference though. And I think education is key. I think a lot of kids out there, they don't know the difference between deep fried, you know, chips
and frozen pizza every day. And like some families, that's all you can afford. And that's hard, you know, and it's cheaper to eat shit food, you know?
Although I do say about this, right, because again, we weren't poor growing up, but we certainly weren't wealthy growing up.
Yeah.
And I've thought about this a little bit, right? Mm. About just the idea of like, you know, obviously there's families out there who are on a certain budget and they cannot afford certain meats and veg and so on. However, like for the same price, if not cheaper price, you can go into a butcher and you can get like cheap cuts of meat in a butcher that are far better.
Education.
Yeah, far better for you than the ultra processed stuff. So I'm talking about like liver, right? Liver, really good for your body. Cheapest chips in a good butcher.
Yeah, I grew up on bacon, cabbage and spuds.
Yeah, but kids don't want to eat it, right? They're like, I don't want to eat that. I'd rather have the deep fried fish fingers.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, it's just all about choices. There's no right or wrong. But I suppose in the days and ages that we're in, people are interested in, okay, what kind of diet is more on? What kind of diet am I on? And it's just that balance, I suppose.
And I just feel like, you know, I'm not an expert or anything, but I feel like if you're cooking the food yourself, if you can, and you know, you're eating whole foods and you're eating and you're having your slice of cake, that's all, like, it's all in balance, isn't it? It's like, you know, it's better to make your own chicken Kiev than buy a processed one. This is the kind of
Or, and if you don't have time, like, you know, buy a bag of bone broth, which costs about whatever it is, €2, and chuck a few vegetables in it, and you've got a cheap soup. You know what I mean? Whatever. But so the trajectory of your business now, right? So, I noticed you do these retreats. I'm intrigued by those.
Yeah.
They're like 6-day retreats. What are we doing every day? Are we doing yoga?
Hours a day? Honestly, they're the best part of my job. They're life-changing for myself, for people. So basically, I've done retreats now that last maybe, my first one was in 2019. I've been doing them. I've probably done over like maybe, I don't know how many retreats, but I do about 5 or 6 a year. And this year I've already been to Portugal, Greece, Spain.
Sounds like a great life all of a sudden.
Now
you went through the hard trajectory of the business. Now you're...
So, you know, it's great. And like I bring like 20 people away or 20, 25 people, and people are like, a week of yoga, that's mad. So the week goes quick. You know, you might get up at like 7 in the morning. We might have a swim if it's one of the places near the sea.
Yep.
Then we'll go into the studio. We'll do 2 hours of yoga meditation till 10 a.m. Then all of a sudden we're having a beautiful big brunch and then it's over 11. Then we might be going for a hike or a walk. Then suddenly it's 1 o'clock. Then we might, you know, chill for a while, have a bit of lunch. And then suddenly it's 4 o'clock. We might have a silent hour. Then we'll do maybe 2 hours of yin yoga. And all of a sudden it's 8 o'clock. You're having dinner and you're going to bed.
And is there any rules on these? I'm always interested. Rules on these retreats? No. Like no alcohol. No one can drink alcohol.
I feel like when I first started doing the retreats, there's a beautiful venue that I go to Greece. I have a bar. And like, you know, I think that my journey where alcohol has definitely changed a lot.
Yeah.
And some of the retreats, there's no alcohol. And I just feel like if you can't go away for 5-6 days without a glass of wine, you might need to change something.
But I suppose with those types of things, I haven't been to one, right? But but I do think, like, it's always on my radar to go to one. I just, and it's down to priorities, right? I've got two kids. I travel a lot. So I don't really feel it's fair for me to go away for a week to do a yoga retreat for a week. I'll eventually do it.
Maybe do a weekend first.
At this moment in time, it doesn't say a weekend I could do for sure. But I think it's important. It's not a holiday, right? Don't see it as a holiday. See it as
it's better
space.
Than a holiday. Like it's like space. We need both, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Like sometimes, you know, you go on a holiday, you come home tired, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You go away on a yoga retreat and you get deep into your body. It's like a mini thing that I do in India. I hold space for people where I ask people just to be mindful of others. People aren't really on their phones much.
Yeah.
There's like, I don't ban phones or anything like that. Mm. There's like deep chats and conversations.
Yeah.
And usually I always say to people, just come on your own. Okay. Sometimes people come with friends.
Yeah.
One or two people book together. But I'm like, you get the most from it if you come on your own. Come on your own. Then you're not bringing your story from home. So say if you come with two friends and then you're talking about the gossip or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So if you come on your own, you fresh people, everyone that goes in these streets, touch wood. Is this real wood?
Yeah. Well, it looks like real. I'm not so sure. Probably not. But anyway.
I've always had amazing people that have the stories, and the ages could be people from early 20s. I've had women up to men, even to their late 70s, 80s. So what's really good about these retreats, there's no like, you know, click. These everyone's in their early 30s or early 40s or early, and there's
every
click
age
and then it gets a bit clicky.
Yep.
And people are from all walks of life, all backgrounds, working professionals usually, and people that have just mad stories. And these stories come out on day two, day three.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And these lifelong friendships are made, and I become friends with everyone too, and it's just amazing.
Do you feel like a therapist?
No, I don't feel like a therapist.
No.
Yeah. I definitely have my boundaries, you know?
Okay.
So, you know, my yoga retreats also are fun. Do you know? So like, I really believe in like, you need to have a bit of crack as well.
Yeah.
You know? So we were laughing from day one to day five, day six, however long it is. Yeah, some people might have a little, like you said, you had that emotional outbreak.
Yeah.
I'd say on every retreat, a couple of people have that. And then they're like mortified. They're like, oh my God, I don't know why I'm crying. I'm not even sad. I'm it's okay. We're all in. And then you'll see people being like that. And then the next day they're crying. They're like, shit, I don't know what happened. I was like, we opened your hips.
It's great though. It's
you're holding,
really
it's
cathartic.
So good. And like, it's not about this whole spiritual, like enlightenment thing. Mm. And I don't, like, I'm not going to say I don't believe in that, but I just feel like that's a whole thing that I don't know if it's one of my, I don't know if it's healthy, this whole kind of thing. So I just feel like if you give people the space away from their normality, like people get ideas, people like, I've had women that have been, you know, single for years and then they go on a retreat and then they come back and they open their heart and all of a sudden they realize they've been stopping themselves meeting someone.
Yes,
and
that's
then
important though.
They contact me the next year that they're having a baby and they met someone.
Yeah,
like, it's bananas, you know?
Yeah, I think you're right about the enlightenment thing. I look into that a lot and I think there's a danger there.
Yeah.
You're searching for enlightenment. And I know a lot of people who have been enlightened and I look at them and go, you're just gone crazy.
Yeah.
Like you're not enlightened. Like you're delusional.
Yeah,
now.
And it's a bit scary, like, you know, and I just feel like, oh, and these people out there are teaching this kind of thing and people get a bit obsessed. It kind of makes it a bit religious, you know, God kind of, like, I believe whatever makes you happy to believe. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think as a teacher or a guide, I don't know what we call ourselves. I think I'm more of a teacher, a guide. It's really important not to be this person that's telling someone they're going to enlighten. Or if you are one of my, actually that guy Sadir said, if someone tells you they're enlightened, they're not enlightened.
Yeah. I think there's a truth to that.
Yeah.
But also, here's a question for you. definitely, it's a female-dominated space, I believe. Unless I'm wrong. Like, I would imagine at your classes, it has
is
to be predominantly
in
female,
Ireland.
Right?
This is what fascinates me, right? Because I have lots of guys that do yoga with me every day online and come to my clubbers and that, but it's always like a very small percentage.
I was about to say, it has to be small. How do we encourage the men listening out there to grasp the concept, stretching is good for you. Yoga is good for you.
Just how do we encourage them to do it? And see how you feel good. Just try it.
I think the reason they don't do it, right, because I can only speak to myself and haven't spoken. There's an embarrassment there of, oh, I'm going to be in this environment where all these women, and there's a weirdness in that for men to feel embarrassed and feel like, oh God, I'm not going to be able to stretch and there's all these women around and it's uncomfortable.
I think it's a little bit of an Irish thing as well. Like maybe it's like an old Catholic feeling. You know, I don't know, because when I was living in New Zealand and I was a yoga student there for 7 years, my classes were 50-50.
That's what I mean.
There was loads of lads, like all the rugby teams, that's their guy. You know, they're all have yoga. In my work, there was yoga. And it was never a female thing. Now, a lot of the rest of the world, I think New Zealanders would be more kind of open to it. But Ireland, you know, it definitely, there is loads of men doing it.
Yeah.
But we just need more, don't we?
And do you have a vision for your compelling future? Like I when I say compelling future, do you have goals, like long-term goals, or is it just living in the moment now?
A bit of both.
Okay.
You know,
what
like
those long-term
like
goals?
I want to keep contentment. So I feel like I'm chasing. I don't even know what I'm chasing at the moment.
Everyone's chasing.
You're
chasing
something.
I think contentment is
and I get to these moments where I'm like, oh my God, like this summer I'm like, you know, I'm trying to slow down a little bit, saying that I've like taught yoga every day the last 2 weeks, but you know, I'm like, my goal, I suppose, would just be finding that contentment with life. But then also, I think you need a bit of fire as well.
Yeah, I think,
you know, keep you going, a bit of spark.
I've been very busy this year, and like my contentment in my head is, okay, I'm going to go on 2 weeks holidays in August. And I'm like, in my head, I'm wondering, can I actually go fully offline for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And I've never done that, certainly not in many years. So in my head, I'm like, okay, but I don't want my socials to just, I don't want to be one of these people who says, all right, I'll be gone for 2 weeks, I'll be back, because there is a danger to that your followers might forget about you. So I'm thinking, can I just create 2 weeks content in advance, schedule it all, then hit the, I'm out of office on my emails, and actually go, get rid of the phone for 2 weeks. Like, there's no reason to then have it. I think I'm going to, is my point.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to at least think like that, even for a weekend. Do you know what I mean?
Just go
offline.
Or if you had someone that like was there that could check in for half an hour every even to make sure there's no emergencies.
Yeah.
But I feel like if something's happening, you'll hear.
Well, this is it. And
you know, like it's so wild, because I did a TV show, which I actually don't even like talking about, and I'm bringing it up now, but I did The Apprentice a couple of years ago.
Oh, okay.
Our phones were taken from us for 6.5 weeks, or the time you were in the show.
Yeah.
So I had no phone. I was like, oh my God, that's my social media, everything I built.
Sorry, is this The Apprentice UK or
Ireland?
Yeah,
the UK one. And I had no phone, right? And even though it was 7 weeks actually with no phone, and the first few days it was an anxiety, and I kept looking for it. Looking for it.
Yeah,
I was like, what am I doing? And I was like,
just,
you know, and then, but we had like, at the end of the time, I did see it took me like a couple of weeks to build up the momentum online again, but it was fine.
Yeah.
And so I was that, now I'm like to myself, you could definitely do 2 weeks. I'm actually thinking, hopefully, we've just bought a house, so we're trying to prioritize. But one of my other values is travel. Travel. I love traveling.
Okay.
I love adventure.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this Christmas to go to Sri Lanka. That's on.
Oh, wow.
That's
beautiful.
Something that I'm aiming. Haven't booked flights yet, but that's what I'm aiming for. And I'd love to do the same.
But like,
even half the trip, like maybe 10 days, no phone.
I just remembered actually the last time I was without a phone. It was a good few years ago now, but it was about, I'm going to say, 10, maybe 12 years ago, I was fishing with a friend of mine, Gaffer. This is a completely random story. Gaffer down in Thomastown, and we were fishing, and a thunderstorm came in. And you should stop fishing when a thunderstorm comes in. But the fishing was really good. We were catching like big salmon, so we just kept fishing.
Amazing.
But the rain was coming down like crazy. And I had this brand new rain jacket, which had a waterproof pocket for your phone. But when I got back up to the car with my two salmon, ultimately I opened up the pocket, and it was full of water, and the phone was just gone.
Oh,
it was
my
just
God.
Dead.
Yeah.
And I handed it in to be fixed, and they were like, no, this is unfixable. And I just didn't bother getting a mobile phone for a while. I just didn't bother. And the odd time I'd go on email, but other than that, now this is before I was heavy on socials, of course.
Yeah. Right?
But it was actually a beautiful thing. I got really used to not having a phone, but so used to it eventually my wife was like, you've got to have a phone, Keith.
We need
like,
to contact you. Know what I mean?
Like, we need to be able to get you. Like, people are wondering why you're not responding and so on. So eventually I did. Before we wrap it up, a couple of quick fire questions. What are you frightened of? Have you any fears?
Do you know, like, I don't know if I have fears. Like, I would say my biggest fear of, oh God, like losing my family. I'd hate that. Like,
yeah.
Very close family.
Yeah.
I'd hate for anything to happen, any of them. Do you know, that would be the biggest, God, I'm going to bless myself saying that. But that would be my biggest fear. Like, okay. I don't really have, like, I don't mind spiders and things like that. I'm all good. Don't mind the bugs.
That's great because like many people do have fears.
Now, I wouldn't love like a rat like in the house. Do you know what I mean?
Well, they're vermin. Yeah. If they bite you, you're getting wheels disease.
Like, I don't like rodents. Like, I wouldn't have a pet one, but I love animals and I don't really have a major fear.
And to loop back to it, what would be one of your goals for your future? Like, to continue to do what you're doing, or do you have other aspirations and ambitions?
I hope, and I think I will be doing yoga, teaching yoga until I'm like 90. You know, I want to teach it forever. And I would love to make yoga with more of my online studio a household name. Yeah. Okay. And like, I feel like I'm helping a lot of people move and feel good in their body from their homes. I mean, I will always say this. Online yoga is amazing. You can do it anywhere, but in person, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
But for most of us, it's just too hard to get places with all our other commitments.
And would you eventually, do you think, down the line, set up a studio that you're in every day with
people? Well, I've already had one of those and that failed as well.
I was about to say.
So that's another story.
Yeah,
that's
another story.
That's probably another podcast.
Another time.
Yeah, so I would definitely, you know, go again for that, but it's a very hard business.
Okay. Finally, is there a yoga pose that you could teach me now that we can do seated, or do we have to be standing around the ground?
Is there
seated yoga?
We could absolutely do a seated yoga.
Oh, let's
pose.
Do this.
Okay. So what are you feeling like now? Do you have tight hips or?
Oh, I'm broke up. So I can tell you exactly what I have, because I only said it to my wife yesterday. So I've definitely have tight hips, but I've got this compression in my upper back. So up here, that kind of tends to compress in on my lungs. Right, so I find it heavy breathing because my back is so tight. Yeah. I've had that before as well, so I need to get that opened
up. Okay,
so
I'm going to say, which seated cat cows, okay? And they're definitely underrated.
Didn't know this was a thing. Oh my God, we're going to get footage of this, people.
You've definitely done this before. So say if you're on a table like we are, first of all, I want you to do is bring your chin in and push your, so you're curving your back. You know when people say don't hunch over?
Okay, yeah, I'm going to pull back the curve of my back a little bit.
And you can even put your hands on your knees, actually.
Yeah.
And then on your inhale, I want you to push your heart forward. So push your chest all the way out. So you're arching. Take a big breath in, inhale. And then on your exhale now, go back again. Bring the navel in, the chin. So you see these little seated cat cows?
Yeah.
So you're trying to pull your shoulder blades apart when you're coming in. And then as you inhale, you're pushing apart. So even a couple of those with your breath. So inhale
to crack
expand.
My back. Is that a good thing or
That's
bad
That's okay. The cracks are usually just little pockets of gas you need to release.
But they sound good though.
Yeah, they sound good. Or they sound scary. And then bring the chin in.
Am I doing it right here?
You are. But if you bring the navel right in and almost get your lower back away from the back of the seat.
Okay.
And then you feel the shoulder blades pull apart. Can you feel that?
Yeah.
And then inhale, arch forward. So give the spinal arch. So our spine. So I think it's just moving our spine in many different ways. So what happens a lot of us is we're seated, right? Yeah. In the sedentary seat that none of us should be in all the time.
Yeah,
our bodies aren't built for it.
Yeah.
So just getting up and moving. Mm-hmm. You're at a desk. And this is what I always catch my husband doing. He talks to me. He moves his whole body to me like this.
Yep.
And I'm like, move your neck without your body. See what I mean?
So
you're not just like moving your whole body. And little move your body in every way you can. Stretch your body in every way you can.
Deadly. Well, listen, this has been a very insightful conversation. Again, remind people where they can follow you to find your classes, find everything about yoga.
It's just yoga with Maura. Yoga with Maura.ie or yoga with Maura. It's very original.
It's just yoga with Maura. It's so easy to find. Listen, it's been a beautiful conversation. Thank you so much. And I will see you at your next yoga session.
Yes, thank you so much. Namaste.
Thanks. Bye. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow, rate and share wherever you get your podcasts. It helps others find the show and it means the world to us. Thanks for listening. Keith Barry's Open Mind is a Go Loud original podcast. Our producer is Oran O'Halloran, and the executive producer is Pamela Blake. Darren Murphy is our video producer.